Straightforward.
All right. So, calling the Developmental Disability Advisory Board for January to order, and it is now 5:15. If you need to get information, it is online. Okay. So, is there any community input?
It's being recorded.
We wanted to let you know that. So, do we have any community input tonight? Darla?
I just wanted to let everybody know that our legislative reception for developmental disabilities will be happening on January the 17th up in Olympia. And if anyone's interested in attending, we will be taking individuals up and would love to have the company.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Is there going to be an electronic something coming out with those?
Yes.
Good. I apologize for not working it.
Oh, did you get one?
No, we said one electronically. I'll forward it to families.
Okay.
Okay. Equity and employment. Trish?
Darla.
Sorry. So excited, Linda.
I appreciate you letting me go first. Sure, we actually have a fun with one of our legislators. So, the governor's budget came out last month. And so I'm a little, I would say happy faces, but there's more sad faces than happy faces, but some happy. The big concern, so on this side we have the governor's proposed budget. On this side, there's a breakdown of the FTEs. Basically, they're requesting, there's 26 million for the RHC. 46 for the RHC. I don't know if you have been tracking, but Fircrest and Rainier are being decertified through CMS, so that means they're being put on hold for a while. They have a year to correct those issues before they will risk losing their federal funding. So the governor's budget is requesting a lot of funding to go toward the RHCs. And so that's kind of the breakdown here. Let me get this one. There we go. And then on the back page, on the back of that, it's broken down where people live. There's some data from DDA on there. So you'll see how many people live where and the percentage the DDA spends on where people live. So that's broken down. And then on the very back of the governor's budget is the developmental disabilities biennial budget, and this was for the this is the requested, it must be requested, it's the 2017-2019 budget that they have right now. So we've got a lot of work. We hear that session's going to be short, fast, and sweet. They're not going to pass a lot of bills. Representative Kildorf has a bill that's put out that if she can figure out how to do it, it would be amazing. It really is kind of just says that from birth to death, everybody's going to have a good life and be fully included, and we're going to do all kinds of good, wonderful things. It would be amazing if we can figure out how to do that. Senator O'Ban, I don't know if he's a senator.
But he's now off of.
He is, but he has a good bill that's coming out that we've had a lot of advocates working on across the state, and it's really working and looking at how do we improve transition services from school to employment, right? And so they're really looking at what does that look like. CEA is very involved, Community Employment Alliance is very involved in that bill. And then there's several bills coming out on guardianship issues. So. Stay tuned. As you know, this is just the first draft. It will be interesting. We still do not have a capital budget. We've been told that while they have the votes to pass a capital budget, to pass the capital budget as it's written, they have to pass a bond. Is that correct? That's not the right term. It's not a bond.
It's a bond bill. They have to pass the finance.
They can't pass that. So I don't know what's going to happen. A lot of the RHC issues are in the capital budget because the Rainier and Furcrest, and primarily Rainier, Furcrest, and Lakeland. I think Yakima might be in a little bit better condition than some of the others. Need a lot of repairs. So, and last count, there are 697 individuals that are living in the RHCs.
Do you know what that works out to be per individual, per...
I was thinking that 26 million for 697 people, we should be able to, I don't know, you could like cruise for the rest of your life.
There is a person that is on a perpetual cruise because it's less expensive than...
Well, then they provide doctors, they have nurses, they have staff, they cook your meals, they clean your rooms. I mean, there is a lot of ADL support that is just provided in that environment.
Maybe we should just buy a big boat.
We want inclusion in the community.
Okay, then I'll take their spot.
I'll volunteer to be a part of the inclusion.
Okay, you got two people. What percentage is two out of 600?
I don't know if you guys have any questions. Do you want any more details?
Yeah, I don't like seeing a lot of those sad faces, though. That's not good.
Yeah.
Is there anything we've been talking about consolidation when we've been meeting with two legislators, so Walt Verdi
There has been. There's a lot of people talking about consolidation right now because our the numbers of individuals are getting low enough. And with the decertification, it, you know, Furcrest doesn't even have their own laundry facilities at this point in time. So there would be, you know, in some respects, it seems like this is kind of a time that it would make sense. That, and then when you look at the other issue around the Federation and the need for employment, we never have enough. We're short on employees right now everywhere in all fields, right? So in some respects, I think it would make sense. I haven't heard of any of the conversation coming from that way. You know, I just want to say, as advocates, our number one goal is to make sure everybody's healthy and safe and that their needs are provided for in whatever environment that is. And we want everyone to have their civil rights met. And
I'm all for that.
Oh, that sounded like a political pitch.
I'll support you on that one, Darla.
It'll never happen.
On this chart, community residential services, 4,650 clients. What is included?
So, what the community residential?
Adult family homes.
I do not believe adult family homes are included in there. I think
it's DD contracted, I believe.
Yeah, DD contracted. I think the adult family homes, if I remember right, and Jane, I don't know if you have this number off the top of your head, but I think there's like 1,900 in adult family homes or something like that. I can give you that number if you want. We have that worked down somewhere else. It's just not in this chart.
If you look in our comprehensive plan, Bill, you can see the breakout in Clark County, and there are now more people living in their own homes than any place other than with family. And then adult family homes is paid through aging and adult services rather than the DD budget. So this is not adult family
homes. This doesn't
David wouldn't be counted in there.
Okay.
And then individuals that are living independently and receiving community first services for their ADLs would be up here in this red, right? And 80% of all individuals who experience an intellectual and developmental disability are living at home with mom, dad, sister, brother, grandma, parent, whatever combination of family or on their own.
Either than my own.
Thanks. Stay tuned for things to come.
Yes.
Right. Now we'll go to equity and employment.
Well, actually, I promised, and so this.
Sorry, we won't. This on Monday, on Tuesday, there was supposed to be someone from the Workforce and Southwest Washington Workforce Council, and his two-year-old is major sick. So he said he couldn't come till March. And I called Andy Silver, who's with the Council for the Homeless, and he's doing some really interesting things that Darla and I and some other families and the state met with. And so I thought it would be really interesting, especially for you, Del, to hear about what is in Angie's future, because we've been talking to our legislators the last couple of weeks about housing also, about the need. We didn't have a solution, but we threw out housing. So this is Andy Silver, who is the executive director for Council for the Homeless.
Thank you. If you're not familiar with Council for the Homeless, we're a nonprofit that works throughout Clark County to help coordinate the efforts to prevent homelessness. So we work with local government, homeless service providers, faith community, business community, and we do policy and advocacy. We are the centralized access point for emergency shelters and housing services for people who are homeless, keep all of the data, do that sort of role. So back in about 2014, if you think back to 2014, it was sort of the time period when what is now, I don't know if we can still call it a housing crisis because it's just ongoing, but it was a time that sort of the really tight rental market and rising rents came to the top of the community's consciousness, I think, for the first time. And doing the work that we do, we saw two really major impacts start to happen from our housing market. One is that the demand for homeless services really shot up. More and more people were sort of dropping out of the bottom of the rental market. And the other was that it was harder and harder for us and our partners to help people get into the rental market because there just weren't places available. It was tough to find a place to rent. Obviously rents were going up, and when there's so many people competing for the same apartments, the screening criteria gets tougher and tougher. So the people that we work with who have, you know, maybe not the best credit or past eviction, criminal history, were having a really tough time. So we decided as an organization to start a deep dive into studying what were the root causes. Was it just that we need to build more? What was going on? Was it going to correct itself? What could be done? And through that process over the last few years, it led us through a series of things that has now culminated in the Council for the Homeless started its own housing development company called the Housing Initiative. We created it as an LLC, a limited liability company, for some of the stuff that we're hoping to do with it. And our goal is to increase the amount of housing in the community that is mission driven. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So we want to, from the perspective of an organization that works with people who are disproportionately affected by the rental market, create housing that is owned, designed, financed in a way that it can rent to people who are getting left out of the housing market. So that means in terms of rents, it also means in terms of barriers, like I mentioned before, and screening criteria. And the way that we're approaching it, at least at the beginning, is that we've sort of settled on this financing model where we're using socially motivated equity partners, so people, philanthropists in the community who give to the causes we care about and approach them and saying, how about investing in this, and instead of getting the 15 or 20% return you get in the real estate market, we can give you a 3 or 5% return. But those savings will go into lower rents for the people that we all care about. So a mission-related return rather than just a financial return. And then also working with foundations like the Community Foundation to do sort of that below market lending as well, as well as working with banks. So our very first project, which we've closed on the land and the financing on, but don't quite have a shovel in the ground yet, is called the Pacific. It's 18 apartments. They are modest one-bedroom apartments. And part of the reason I'm here tonight is that for at least five of those apartments, we're giving a preference to people who have intellectual or developmental disabilities, both because that was something that the Community Foundation was interested in, something that we discussed with Mary and others as a need. So it'll be, I think I mentioned 18 apartments overall, two buildings, a 10 apartment building, an 8 apartment building, a community room, laundry on site, and it's hopefully the first of many efforts like this. And then I actually am going to be leaving my current position next month and working full-time, I should have said full-time, working as much as we have worked for the housing initiative as we try to get more and more of these developments off the ground. So we hope it's a promising model in a way that we can you know, help to try to fill this void that we know is pretty huge right now in the community. Any questions?
Where is the Pacific going to be located?
It is, it's at just south of Fourth Plain at 78th, so across the street from Barnes & Noble, you know where that is. There's a there's an affordable housing development called the Meadows that Second Step Housing is doing, and they had some extra land, so it's right next to that.
Good.
Yeah, it's on the rapid.
It's close to the grocery store. Yeah.
You know, it's close to the community, more in the community access, which is good. Nice. Yeah.
More is choice.
Andy, I have a question. The recent bond that was passed by the City of Vancouver, there's strictly for housing. Will you have any connection with that as part of working with that for those funds? Or?
Yes, so there is there's $250,000 of the levy money that is in that project, and that allows us to get even lower rents. Okay. So the way that we've set up our model, the traditional way to develop affordable housing relies on sort of mixing together a bunch of different types of public subsidy and usually uses a system called low-income housing tax credit. And it's a wonderful, you know, it allows rents to be at really low levels. The downside, though, is that the way there are lots of regulations that come with that money that make the overall cost of those developments higher than normal. So our model is a little bit different. It relies on building and sort of private sector costs in order to pay a return. But there are ways that we have figured out that we can touch things like that levy money without driving up with costs and making the model up.
Just out of coincidence, what are you looking at for, low income, what are you looking at for basically to consider low income?
Sure.
What range?
Yeah, the, well, first of all, I should say, as low rents as we can to make whatever the development is penciling out. For the Pacific, we are lucky in that the housing authority is helping to buy down rents even further from what we otherwise could. So we'll have some rents as low as $350 a month in that development. If there was no rental subsidy at all, for example, we're looking at another project right now that would be larger, more like 40 apartments. And without any rental subsidy, we can get more towards like $700 to $800 a month for one bedroom, which we realize is too high. But our hope is that if that's our starting point, rather than $1,200 or $1,300, then the subsidy money will go further.
Yeah, some places it's just like three times what you do, you know, because that was my problem. When I lived in Boucherville, the rent kept jumping, and it went up three times higher than what I could afford. So I finally just said, hey, I have a choice. I have to either pay bills and do what I've got to do for me, and I've got to get out of here. So I actually went through, my father passed, and he left something for me. So
yeah,
I just recently become a homeowner, and I absolutely love it. I wouldn't trade going back to renting for nothing.
Yeah, and part of, you bring up a good point, which is that sort of, part of our hope is that by locking in, the rents that you have to charge for an apartment depend on how much it costs to build it. But then if you're in the private market, you can increase it depending on if the market's going well. So in our model, because we don't need that profit margin, the hope is that we lock it in for what you can build it, and then in 20 years, if the rental market stays hot the whole time, maybe our rents are now at 50% of the market, whereas when we started, they were at 80%.
But here's another question I have want to ask. If people hit like a hardship, say they get laid off from work and for some reason they can't afford to pay that, is there any kind of assistance that they'll do to help maybe that person to work with them so that they don't lose their housing in a certain situation? I mean, I'm just curious.
Sure. So the way we set it up is that the Council for the Homeless, which is a nonprofit, owns this company that would actually own the housing. And we want to keep it that way because that allows the Council for the Homeless to apply for grants or do fundraising that can help with the things that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the Council for the Homeless has something called a housing relief fund that can be used to help people move into housing or preserve it. So if in one of the developments that was an issue, you know, we could sort of partner with
I think they need to take a serious look at that because I think there's times when people have jobs and certain times throughout the year people get laid off from different spots and, you know, things happen, there's hardships and stuff. So I think that was just something that I was kind of curious to see how they would handle that if that happened.
Sure.
You know, would they work with them or would they give them an alternative to like maybe work off something, work at the facility, and then earn back, maybe paying for their stay there?
It sounds like they're going for it. I mean, it's kind of new, so we don't know all of
them. Well, it sounds like it's a good thing, though. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that, because I know the high demand for it. I always hear people talk about it. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll probably hear more, or if you do want any letters of support or anything, then you have to come in and ask. But now you know who you're asking.
Great. Thank you.
Chris is on the spot.
Okay, so I'm here to give a little update. This was part of my work plan for last year to talk a little bit about equity, and I'm going to wrap in a little bit of diversity in here as well. And I think it's safe to say that this is a topic that this group would be interested in because I think that you all are helping to work to promote diversity in the workplace, meaning having people with disabilities be employed. And that's a big part of the work that we do together. And so I wanted to kind of give you a little update about what I've been up to and also what our department has been up to. So one of the things, I do get some input into my work plan. Mary's very gracious to just not, you know, hammer me with the work. I do get to say what I'm interested in doing. So one of the things that I was thinking about is we've had a number of opportunities working here as the county to participate in diversity trainings, right? So looking at diversity in the workplace, things like the business case for diversity. I went through some diversity training around racial diversity related to leadership Clark County. We attend the Public Employees Diversity Conference. I've been to that a number of times. And we also have a building-based diversity committee that also puts on trainings here in the building for not only county employees, but also the other organizations that are here housed at the Center for Community Health. So one of the things that I, you know, I'm thinking about as I have these opportunities for these diversity trainings, I think that, in my opinion, they've been kind of heavy on the why, right? Making the argument for diversity. And from my background and the work that I do here for the program and promoting diversity in employment for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, I want to get on to the how. So one of the things that I was thinking about as I was looking at my work plan, and has also been coming up in some of these diversity trainings, is this issue of intersectionality. And what we mean by that when we talk about intersectionality is diversity, where there's kind of like, there might be racial diversity and a disability, or sexual orientation and race. So the intersectionality between those things and how that's playing out in the work that we do in our community. So those are just kind of things that I was thinking about. So as I developed my work plan, I thought I want to look at what, how we're doing related to race and outcomes amongst the people that we support here in our program with disabilities. Does that make sense? So I wanted to kind of try to figure out how to gather the data to look at race. We already have demographic data information about our community that's included in our comprehensive plan and has been. But specifically, I wanted to look at how are we doing with our outcomes related to the people that are employed. So I received some data from DDA, so the Developmental Disabilities Administration collects some ethnicity and race information. It was interesting what I found. And I'm just going to kind of hit the high points here. That, you know, they have it broken down into some different categories of Asian, American or Alaskan Native, Black or African American, Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, unreported, and white. You know, I thought that that was kind of interesting because they also then collect languages, Spanish, Russian, or Albanian. And I'm not sure if that is just what has been collected or if those are like the categories they established. So you'll see in my next steps, I have some next steps related to that. So then when I looked at, so then I took the next step to look at the percent of people employed. And keep in mind that our numbers are small, that's a small n of numbers. But what I found is that for the people who are of Alaskan or American Native, we have 40% employed. Asian, we have 64.29% employed. Black or African American, 40% employed. Native, Hawaiian, or Pacific Islander, we have one person that's, we have this counted, that, and they're not employed. So that's zero. Unreported is zero. And white, we're at 50.8%, which is about our average for the total number of people that we have employed. So so this was something that I wanted to look at as part of my work plan. Also part of my work plan was coming to do a report here tonight. And so I also want to talk to you about kind of some of the limitations of this and some next steps, you know, initially, and also get your input as well. So if there's thoughts that you're having as I'm talking, then please let me know. So one of the things that, one of the limitations that I spotted right away was that while we're collecting information, if there's a family that's, or a customer who is Spanish speaking, we're not collecting if it's Latino or Hispanic. It's not included as a demographic there. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And so the next steps for this data is that I'm going to look at comparing this to the general population and other relevant data sets. So, you know, looking at what is the makeup of our community and how does that compare with the makeup of the people that we're serving? What is the percentage employed for the general community in these different groups? So those are some of the things that I want to look at. I'll be providing recommendations and input for the comprehensive plan, as well as input to the state about kind of as we're wrestling with this data and what that looks like for us here in our community. Are there things that maybe we should be collecting in a different way or a better way?
How are you collecting the information right now?
So right now, I received a set of data for the customers that we serve in Clark County from DDA. So DDA is actually the one that has the data. So they gave me the data set, and I don't know how they are going about collecting that information.
Probably on intake, right?
Race information collected on intake, probably?
Yeah, that's part of the
language.
And the application process.
Okay.
Yeah,
there's a report run for me when I asked for it.
So the language piece, would that be then language spoken in the home or the place of residence? Because like at school, that's the question, is it language spoken at home?
Right.
Whereas at school, these kids do speak English and can understand and communicate using English. I think that would be an important thing for your data as far as like, are these people not getting jobs because they only speak Russian or they only, you know?
That is a good point, because we have one person in an institution because he also is deaf and has autism, and his family doesn't speak English, nor do they sign, because signing is American sign with English words, and they don't know English. And there was nobody that could talk to him in Clark County.
But that language piece would be to round that bend and say.
Only I will two. Say that we had only four people that indicated that they had a different language other than English, and two of them are employed. We have a Spanish speaker who's employed and an Albanian speaker who is also employed.
Where did we get a large Albanian group that they would get their own?
Yeah. I don't know. Yes, so that's a good question. How did they get their own category, or maybe it's a write-in? Like if it's another, maybe it's just a question. Like, is there another language spoken at home besides English? And then it's a write-in for whatever the language is.
Ironically, Southern California has a significant Albanian population. Yeah. And so it could have been a transplant from California.
Oh, wow.
See, right there. We need to have gates at the border.
So, moving on, I will talk to you a little bit about what our department's efforts are around equity now. So, when we're talking about, you know, we can talk about diversity and how, you know, we'd like to reflect the, or, you know, represent the qualities and diversity in our community, in the workforce. When we're talking about equity, we're really talking about access to resources. So are we providing services in a way that's equitable so that people, so that we're taking down barriers or at least being able to provide access to resources in an equitable manner, no matter what the person's diversity might be. So in that vein, our department has sent all of the staff in the department through an equity lens training in October. We are currently talking with a consultant, I believe, and there's going to be a team pulled together to be able to begin to start to look at the services that we provide here in the department. Community services to look at what we can do to make sure that our services are provided in an equitable manner. So that's all more to come. That's all I've heard so far. Evidently, I'm going to be on the team, and Sherry Osterman, one of our admin assistants, will also be on the team. But I don't know if you have anything else to add about the equity, Mary.
I think there is more to come. My suspicion would be that where we're falling down is really in the three numbers and the young school age. Before some teacher figures out that they're not hooked up with anything, there's this, I don't think that our current efforts with those really young ones are appropriate. I think we're kind of stop doing outreach the same way, and I mean we aren't in charge of it, but I think that's where our
So what would be a reasonable goal as we're looking at, you know, diversifying and monitoring the inclusion of different folks? Do we have a particular goal that we want to achieve?
I would ask you that. I think that this was kind of a first blush at looking at this. I definitely want to dig more into it to see, you know, where are we kind of on par with what's going on in the general population? Are we different? Are there different, you know, I want to dig in a little bit more. You know, with the numbers so small, if we have one job added to a certain category, then you're, then we've got equity, right? So, if, you know, so since our numbers are so small, but I do want to kind of look into a little bit more as we compare to the general population and other relevant data sources. So I think that it's something that I'd be happy to come back and talk about more again, and that maybe the board can mull it over maybe around time to update the comprehensive plan or those kind of things. If there's a goal that you all want to include, then that could be a possibility.
Is there a percentage they want us to have?
No. So, there's no pressure on this. This is more of a, are we reaching everybody? Are people able to get to DDA? Do they know about it? I think our numbers haven't grown, I think, like they should have. Is that because people don't want service? Is that because people don't know about it? Is that because we have a young community compared to some in our state?
That's true.
Some counties.
I wouldn't have known without Darla coming to a special ed preschool. So, what's it called? ECC, but Vancouver's was called VEC, and I don't even know if these exist really that much anymore. They've kind of been
integrated into
the schools. Mm-hmm. But yeah, without Darla coming to this parent support meeting, I wouldn't have known. Mm-hmm. I just happened to be there and hear her say, go to DDD. Then tell me, no, we can't do anything for you, but we'll put you on this wait list where you'll be frozen for years.
He'd almost fall over when I got the call.
But I got in that system. And so it's really important. And I think definitely the preschoolers, the kindergartners, the teachers should be getting fired out.
They need to help.
You got to get them. You got to find them under the rock. And you find them under the rock in the schools. That's where you find them.
Well, even with all the talk we do around transition, I'm always amazed at the number of families. They go to the training for years, but they don't sign up until after.
It's like last minute.
No, until the September after.
And have someone from DDA come to that. I mean,
they do.
Did they come to the school and actually meet with the parents?
Yeah, so I'll start to do that.
Here's the paperwork, you know.
Transition when PBR works with the schools, but my experience in any of the younger grades, there's just not the staff to come out to schools and try to recruit every family. The services are voluntary. If they want services, they need
to. Then maybe they need community volunteers like us who will bring forms to a school on a particular night and help parents, I guess. I don't know.
I think sometimes that help parent-to-parent thing, because having the educator speak is not the same as a parent. Mm-hmm. Talking to another parent who said, I was in your shoes, and this is, if you don't do this, this is what's going to happen.
Well,
sharing their experience and saying, you know, the sooner that you get into the system of this, and your son or daughter get the services, it's, you know, you're going to have not a little bit smoother. It's not going to be such a shock. But I'm such a passionate about transition, but I think it starts birth to three, you know, in the school and from there on. But I think a lot of times transition's thought of as like, oh, you know, school will take care of them, and then when they're out, but it's not too late, but it's way too late for what they could have had.
Right.
And I can say that since Jack's a senior,
Nobody has said anything to me about DVR. I just happen to know for myself, you know, to go do from this board and from mainly from this board. So, but in his IEP meetings, they don't say the word DVR. It's just like, oh, you know, what's the plan for him? He's not going to stay in the extended program to 21. You know, the things they would teach him, like buying something to store, using public transit, or things that he knows. He's already trained with the bus trainer and drops, but he still is developmentally disabled. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where it was like, okay, he's going to go to community college. Okay, you're on your own. And they didn't give me any literature about DVR. The thing I knew about it, the topic didn't even come up. It was just like, oh, you're going to send him to community college. Okay, good luck with that.
That sounds like the presentation special ed director's meeting.
Yeah.
Training ongoing.
Well, I think at something like that, I think it would be very valuable to have a disabled person who's been through that system and who's moved on. I can't help think of my own son, but you know, when he was in the adult family home, no one, none of the other residents there were working. Well, now there's two of them that are working there. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, yeah, maybe. And so I think that would be something that would help parents to suddenly raise the bar, because I think the tendency is to have such low expectations and remark with child instead of
getting them to the widest training series. And the last two topics are, I think, the value of employment and then meeting the agencies, folks from the different agencies.
I've been in employment training my previous career, and now in public transportation. There's a sense of denial, and so they put it off for as long as they possibly can, and then there's a sense of panic when they realize that it just isn't going to happen. It's going to take years of preparation, and that's a tough thing to overcome, you know. And
it is, but I think if you start laughing and keep hearing it, at some point it'll click.
What does the IEP start?
Three. You're in the system, 3 years old.
But then I think it's also reaching out in the community, making them a little more aware of what, you know, what we have too, like if community forums are like, say if they have like a city council or anything like that, you know, trying to get in there and speak to them, because I think we need to do more of that.
And those are the people, Patrick, that are usually connected. What they're looking for is people that don't seek information. Right. They don't know how, or they're too overwhelmed. Or it's under the rock.
So you see, that's why I think it would be benefit if we did that a little bit more, because I think that...
Well, they have child fund.
Right off the bat, that would help maybe for people that don't understand, get them better connected with things, you know. And I still hear people ask me, you know, like, my sister-in-law, for instance, she's trying to help my nephew, and she's like, I have no idea on how to go about doing any of this. Do you? I says, I understand a little bit. I says, but don't quote me to every little thing, because there might be things that have changed since, you know, from the time that I came into the system. So.
And you know who to call.
Yeah, I know who to call. Yeah. Absolutely, because I've been in touch with my sister-in-law, and I've been trying to help her with my nephew a lot, so I've kind of been stepping up and trying to be his advocate too, so at the same time, and theirs.
And those younger families, the ones with the kids in preschool or the early elementary years, you know, as with any family with small children, it's the most demanding time on you. And when you're a family with small children with disability, those are the overwhelming years. You can't get the information, and then I could see that information sitting, or someone not getting to an agency application because just overwhelmed and overburdened, and it's one more thing. And that's why I think I'm literally handing them the paperwork or having it right there to fill out, I mean, might help a bit. I could just see that to-do list and stuff getting
just down the way. They are very overwhelming years.
They can be. They can very much be. I have a young niece, the two right now, that are very young age, and one of them has attention deficit disorder, so they're learning how to kind of work with that. I don't think they quite understand it, but they're learning how to deal with it.
So I think these are great comments. I'm going to try to incorporate them as I look, and I'll probably come back again to give another update at some point in the future about what I'm working on. So any other questions?
I think it was a good discussion, though.
Yeah, thank you.
Well thought out, too. Well prepared.
Okay, so the nominating committee reports. We have two people who will be new to their positions again. Walt has said yes to being president next 2 years, and Dale will be chairman, and Dale will be the vice chair.
Nice.
So thank you for stepping up and saying yes. And your arms are still attached. Your arms are still attached. They're not twisted off.
No.
Emotion. Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Whatever happened to the gavel? Wasn't there a gavel that was being passed around?
Maybe at our next meeting we can have an official hand down.
Is there a family training series going on this year?
Yes.
Others.
And the next one is?
The next one is January 23rd at Port Vancouver Media Center, and it's Navigating the Adult System. I'll be presenting along with DDA and DVR. Do you want a flyer? I'm just going to email the whole board. I do have a few copies if anybody wants a paper copy.
Congratulations. This was going to be a longer meeting because of the change. It got shorter, but I have something to lengthen it a little bit. Not because I want it long, but
I have something for the business too.
Okay. Do you want to do yours first?
Sure. Bill Bauman, as you know, is our mobility manager for Clark County Transportation. And we're working with the RTC, Regional Transportation Council, in the Human Services Transportation Plan update that's going to be happening this year. And part of the importance is that dictates what types of services that we can use grant funds for here in Clark County through our 5310, 5311 federal funds, 5317, but also it's Washington State's priorities as far as what type of transportation options that are provided to people throughout the state that are a part of target groups. And so Bill is the chairperson of the Accessible Transportation Coalition Initiative, and he is working with the members of the ATCI to develop an opportunity to solicit more than just the perfunctory comments from social service agencies, no offense, from groups like this, no offense, but from people that are affected by transportation, especially public transportation. And so we are going to, can you give them a basic rundown of what's going to happen on March 20th?
Sure.
That wasn't very enthusiastic.
I'm getting signed up for stuff without knowing it, which is a habit of Walt's for me. I came here to listen to the employment and not speak about transportation. But so on March 20th, we're going to have sort of a community forum to allow people to come and speak about transportation. I believe sort of the setup that we wanted to do was hold it, have it so higher up sort of decision makers of local nonprofits, community organizations, whatever, have time to come in and explain how transportation affects their organizations and their clients, and have that sort of during the day, during work hours, and then after hours have an event that's open to the public that allows them to come in and voice their concerns as well. We're thinking about doing this in like the Vancouver area, but we realize that Clark County is bigger than just Vancouver, so we want to figure out a way to just like have it out in Ridgefield as well, have it out maybe in Battleground, maybe in Washington, so we're trying to cover as much of the county as possible. And then even if we can figure it out, is there a way that we can get it so we sort of broadcast over the internet and people can weigh in comments that they will, and make it truly accessible and reach the most people.
Would CBTV?
Yeah, that's one of the groups that we're going to try to convince.
Yeah.
The event at
20th should be in the Clark County Chambers. And I noticed that the commission on the
6th floor.
And so that has the CBTV.
Oh, just out of curiosity, are they looking to extend that to the Woodland area at all? Are they looking to extend that into the Woodland area?
The Woodland area.
Woodland.
Because transportation out there is a big issue.
Yeah, so that's Woodland straddles Clark County and Calhoun. So I guess for the sake of this plan, it would only be the part that's in Clark County. So that's right. A little rural area.
Because I'm in the Clark, I'm on the Clark, mm-hmm. on the borderline between Clark and Calhoun. So I'm right there in Clark.
So Calhoun's, is it with Viacom that's connected with them?
Yes.
Should be doing a human services transportation plan update as well. Mm-hmm. The urban side of Woodland would be covering that plan.
I know where Viacom is.
No, they cover both counties in one report. Just like ours covers Clark, Trevanion, and Klickitat. This is not a project that's put on by the Human Services Council. This is done by the Regional Transportation Council?
Yes.
And so that's their coverage area, as Clark's community, Klickitat. I'm focused on Clark and selection.
And the equivalent, the Metropolitan Planning Organization in Cowles County would be then hosting, collecting data, collecting information from consumers and from advocates and from special interest groups for the Cowles and Kayakum area. Just like in Lewis County, they'll be doing something as well. And then they in turn report that to Washington State Department of Transportation. Mm-hmm. To give you an example of how important this is that we came up with a couple of ideas for the $5310 that I administer that is federal funds. But if it's not part of the human transportation plan, human services transportation plan, even though it may be a great idea, we hear everybody talking about, yeah, this is what we need. If it's not in the plan as being a priority, let's say, for example, nutritional shopping or something along those podiatry appointments or whatever, then we can't fund it because it's outside of the priorities of the state of Washington and our particular area. What I was hoping is that maybe one of the things that we could do to really hone in on the needs of people with cognitive intellectual disabilities is focus our efforts on that and getting the input of all of you, but also members in the audience, and basically having a mini
Electric's going down,
well, I'll
kind of
speed
up.
mini event here, yeah. But that's what I'd like to propose to the group.
For March, you mean?
Yeah.
At the March meeting?
When I said that, I'm finding transportation in Woodland to a tough challenge, because like, what they had available throughout the week, Monday through Friday is the CAT bus, if those are familiar with CAT. And that will take you into Longview, it will also take you into Vancouver. However, on weekend service like Saturdays and Sundays, there's absolutely nothing. So if there's an emergency, you either have to call for an ambulance, or you have to find someone that provides medical transport.
And see, that's exactly the type of comments that we need to have for the Cowlitz County and Clark County.
Save for
that
for
northern part. And saying, hey, listen, you know, it part of the CAP bus is funded by special needs transportation.
Yeah.
And so as a consequence, if it's outlined in the Human Services Transportation Plan, it can then use other funding sources or leverage itself.
Right.
But what it doesn't have right now is the weekend type of needs.
They don't have anything for the weekday is great, but the weekend services are absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I hear people complain all the time because, you know, you're pretty much, if you don't have a vehicle or you don't drive, you're pretty much stuck in Woodland. Mm-hmm. That's what your choices are. Or either that, or you got to find alternative transportation.
Right.
And you can't always guarantee how easy that's going to be, because it's not.
Yeah, no, it isn't. And what I was thinking is that a portion of our March meeting, what date would that be? March 7th, would be a good way to kick off everything. And that way people that are interested could communicate to us. We would make sure that their needs and expectations that maybe are not being fulfilled right now would be communicated to. Linda David is the point person with the Regional Transportation Council.
Right.
We could have her here to document and do almost like a mini outreach forum.
Yeah.
One of the things that I know that Bill and I really are interested in is a technology approach where you don't have to leave the comforts of your home in Woodland to be able to get your 2 cents worth. Maybe it's done through we've talked about webinars, FaceTime. You know, I communicate with my grandson in Virginia by FaceTime. Why can't we do the same thing in soliciting ideas that be part of this plan?
Well, it's a good thing it's March, so we have some time to work on.
Well, good, but it sounds like it's a step in the right direction is where we're going. And I like the way that's being done, because I always have people approaching me saying, what can we do to fix this problem here? Because it seems to be a big issue where I live.
Right. It doesn't necessarily mean there's any more monies.
Right.
But what it means is that it's listed as a priority, mm-hmm. so that if someone wanted to do a grant or solicit additional support from DOT,
right.
it could be earmarked. And the first hurdle is it part of the Human Services Transportation Plan?
Right.
Does it meet the needs of the community?
Yeah.
Okay. I still have more. Mm-hmm. Okay, this was just an FYI. Our department did a strategic plan. The county has gone to, they're willing to pretty up things. So probably our plan, they're helping me work on that so that it's, they want to go to more of a uniform look to the county document. And surprisingly enough, they did use a lot of our pictures in this one.
Yeah, I saw it.
So now I have to find different pictures for ours. They're not to the picture part yet. Ours will be substantially bigger still. But it may. It's really nice of them to do that. Anyway, that's just an FYI. This is something you got to think about now. This is a letter, it came from Disability Rights Washington, DRW, and all the disability rights organizations across the country are doing this, plus the Association for Persons with disabilities and the university-affiliated centers and the National ARC, and that's part of the consortium. And they are writing, they want people to sign on to this letter because in December, there were some guidance letters that were removed from the Department of Justice related to Olmstead and the ADA, and they do not want it to affect integrated employment. So the concern here is about integrated employment and not going back on that. We frankly have nothing to lose signing on to it and supporting it, but it's your decision to do that. And I brought some for our contractors. If Norm, you could sign on. All you have to do is email the person in the back, but I wanted to sign it if you want to do that.
Sure.
So that's kind of your decision to make.
What do people think?
They say that it isn't changing the law, but it was concerning that all the guidance was removed and that states who are weak on employment then have nothing to follow and will not do it.
Just out of curiosity, Mary, what all of this entails, because I'm curious, I don't know if I understand kind of what we're getting at with this letter.
The letter was, there was guidance around the Department of Justice around people needing to be in integrated employment with competitive wages, you know, minimum wage or better. And again, it's not such a deal in Washington. It's kind of but they're looking for support to not weaken the regulations. Don't go back on them and let sheltered work and some minimum wage prevail.
I don't agree with that, especially it's ridiculous when some people work in sheltered workshops and they only make 10 cents to about 50 cents an hour. Basically all they get a day.
Well, that's what this wants to prevent.
I'm definitely supportive of that.
Do we want to act on this tonight? You can. I have to give it to them by the 5th.
Right. Do we have a motion to endorse this?
So moved.
Second. Discussion. All people say maybe.
Bye.
Okay.
And if you sign this,
I gotta talk to you.
Okay. Then you can get that to me, and I will send off probably something that looks a little better than a blank piece of paper. Right. And the other thing was I've been asked to wait for you to meet with the Board of County Councilors until a new county manager is hired, so that it can be used as a learning opportunity for this person.
Right.
Whoever they might be. I don't know.
Do they have a timeline?
Yeah, that's fine.
Should do interviews this month.
Oh, okay.
It's really hard to say. It's really hard to say.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's why we haven't met with them, because they thought it would be a great learning opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Are there any decisions that they're making or policies they're looking at that present an urgency? Some years there have been different issues that came up that they're tinkering with.
We're watching the levy rate on the property taxes, because in the statute it says 2.5 cents per.
That came up previously, an issue of interpretation.
Yes, it did. And so right now we're kind of watching it because they're not presenting the information. The information that the budget office is presenting is numbers, but it doesn't say anything about the rates. And so unless someone asks that question, they wouldn't know Yeah, they already passed the levy for this year. They haven't certified it.
They haven't certified it yet.
Oh, okay.
And it's very unclear from what we've seen what it's actually going to be.
Yeah.
So they haven't certified it yet. So I don't know what to say with that except stay tuned until we know more and actually have the numbers and they certify something and then we see what it means. And the other thing, no, everything else is, Julie Olson is very excited about having somebody hired in their office, but we thought maybe the county new county manager might want to be involved since it's his staff.
Yeah.
Mary,
I have a question.
Maybe you get to change it.
Well, because thoughts are, I want to keep what I've got because I like who I'm working with. It's just that I don't feel that they're going the direction that I want them to go in. And I don't feel like that's basically defeating the goal of paid employment because my goal is paid employment. My goal is eventually to do that, and I don't feel like I'm any closer to that than I've been in the past. And I told my sister today, I said, I'm not very pleased with that for the fact being because I feel like they're trying to keep me on a volunteer basis. You're keeping me involved in some training, which I think is beneficial to me, but I also feel that it's not really, it's not. Because I've done everything they've asked me to do so far as assessments go. And I mean, I'm giving my time and really, my sister's like, well, how does that work? Because she doesn't understand the process with that. And I explained a little bit of what I know to her. She's like, well, you think that maybe they'd stop having to do assessments and get you more towards paid employment? Because that hasn't happened yet.
Why don't we talk about it? Can we talk about it after the meeting? Let's see another chat.
Yeah, yes, we can. Del has one more.
Supposed to be in on my son David, and I just wanted to let you know that we have just this week moved him into Stephen's place, and he's excited, very excited, and we're very pleased with it, and we think it's going to be a wonderful opportunity for him to grow, and so we're learning about it, and if you know of anyone who's interested, I can.
Is there openings?
Yeah, there are definitely openings.
What is it anyway, Dale? Just out of curiosity.
Well, it's technically an assisted living. It's under the state in that regard, but it's the focus is on younger residents.
Like what age group are we looking at?
Well, there are some probably in their 20s up to maybe one that's 40 or 50. So,
if it's possible, could we get a flyer or something about that? Because maybe that's something I can get to my sister-in-law.
So you don't know, it's private pay. And so it's expensive compared to anything else that you, well, I shouldn't say anything else, but it's more expensive. But it's way a year above the adult family home he was in, which I think was a very good one. So.
Anyway. Yeah, I'd like to know a little bit more about that. Okay. Well, thank you guys for everything for the Christmas stuff that you gave us. That was very nice.
Yes. Yes.
Very sweet of you guys.
Yeah, that was very nice.
Thank you so much. Very nice. I appreciated that very much. That was nice.
Anything else? Okay, I will entertain a motion to move.
So I just
mentioned it, right?
I'm all for that.
Thank you very much.